Welcome to Noon Edition. I'm Bob Salzberg, editor of the Herald Times in Bloomington. And today we're going to celebrate Black History Month by talking with a couple of people who are very involved with minority affairs here in Bloomington and on the IU campus. Edwin Marshall is the IU Vice President for Diversity, Equity, and Multicultural Affairs. And Beverly Callender Anderson is Bloomington Safe and Civil Cities Director. If you have questions or comments, please phone us at 855-0811 or 877-285-9348, or you can send your email to noon@indiana.edu. Ed, Beverly, welcome to the program.
Thank you. Thank you.
Thanks for being here. You know, I said we're going to be celebrating Black History Month, and that obviously is true, but both of you do so many more things, and you're involved with a lot of different groups of people. So I thought I'd start out by just asking, and I'll ask Beverly first, to talk about the Safe and Civil City program and sort of the overarching goals that you have.
Well, the main goal of the Safe and Civil City program of the city of Bloomington is to help ensure that the city is a welcoming, valuing community that respects all of the visitors and residents that are here. And we do that in a number of ways, and diversity being one of them. But we also provide support to organizations and to the community when unexpected events come up, so in a community response kind of way, when things are going on in the city or in the community that require some immediate or emergency assistance. We work with the local law enforcement, all law enforcement, on public safety issues. We have a Sister Cities program where we work internationally with those cities that we've partnered with. And so there are a lot of things that we do, and diversity is one part of that. But our programs really do try to ensure that everyone feels respected and welcomed in Bloomington.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And Ed, the Office of Diversity, Equity, and Multicultural Affairs.
It's kind of a mirror of what is happening in the city, focusing primarily on the university environment, but obviously it has to relate very well with the surrounding communities, including Bloomington. I look at the office as being kind of a three-legged stool, if you will. One piece of that is the pre-collegiate aspect, growing the pipeline from kindergarten or even pre-kindergarten up through 12th grade. So working with school systems around the state, particularly high-need schools, schools in cities like Indianapolis, Gary, Fort Wayne, South Bend, Evansville, trying to make sure that those students are ready and prepared for entry into college. The second leg of that stool would then be the collegiate side. Once those students have enrolled, then we want to make sure that we provide the appropriate resources to make them and help them to become successful in their undergraduate experience. And then the third stool kind of is kind of an encompassing leg, and that it looks at the whole issue of climate. As Beverly said, we want to make sure that the university, the campus, is welcoming, it's nurturing. So we want to have programs in place to, as best we can, make the environment look at least somewhat like the environments that these students come from. So multicultural initiatives that support programs in the arts and culture, the culture centers, all tend to help support that piece of the stool as well.
Mm-hmm. Okay, let's talk a little bit. I'm going to stay with you for a minute. Let's talk about the pre-collegiate part. I know we were talking before we went on the program about the 21st Century Scholars Program. Is that the number one program that you have, or is it one of many programs you have to try to encourage younger kids to get on the right track?
That's one of many. The 21st Century Scholars Program and now the 21st Century Covenant are both designed to have students identify early that college is part of their life goals, and that they commit themselves to preparing themselves for entry into college and hopefully Indiana University. But we have other programs as well. We have a program called the Community and School Partnerships, which works with middle school kids. We bring kids to campus during the summer, for an example. They do shadowing programs. They'll spend a couple of days here, getting a sense of what it might be like to be at an Indiana University, Bloomington.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Our phone numbers again, 855-0811 or 877-285-9348. And you can send your email to noon@indiana.edu. And we actually already have an email, and I'm going to read through this, but essentially they're asking you to give me some advice about media coverage. And I'm always happy to take it. So it says, recently the local paper, that would be the Herald Times, was criticized for presenting the face of drug crime in our community in a misleading way with front page photos of three African Americans. A related concern is how the face of our community is shaped by default through lack of coverage. And here's an example. It says, last year, the local paper ran an excellent series of daily profiles of local African Americans during Black History Month. I must say we're doing a similar thing this year. As an experiment, I looked through each issue of the paper for the month after Black History Month to see how many stories were carried and faces presented of local African Americans, Latino Americans, and Asian Americans. There were virtually none, it says, and I have no way to refute that. So we'll take this person at face value. I believe the face of the local paper reflects back to its readership about which kinds of people our community include. It is often shaped by lack of coverage, by sin of omission. Specifically, the invisibility of local people of color in the local media can reinforce for white residents the mistaken notion that people of color are outsiders or marginal, not only now but throughout our history. So then to the question, what advice can you give local media about ways to make sure the face of our community regularly reflects our racial, religious, ethnic, sexual, and other diversities throughout the year, not just during one designated month?
I'll take a stab at that.
All right.
You know, Black History Month is, I think it's great to identify a period in time to talk about the contributions of African Americans to this country. But we need to be cognizant of the fact that all these contributions did not occur in the month of February. These contributions occurred throughout the year, and we need to celebrate those contributions 12 months out of the year, not just in February. And I think it's important then that the media, and for many, the media basically is the lens through which they see the world. It's important that the media be as balanced as possible in the images that it projects of not only African Americans, but of any particular racial or ethnic group. Mm-hmm. So I would encourage the media to be as sensitive to those issues from March through January as it is during February.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah. And I agree with that. And the media is such a powerful tool, excuse me, in shaping opinions. Of course, I was very aware of the incident with the drug crime that the writer spoke about, and also with your retraction on the editorial page, well, not necessarily a retraction, but the apology for doing that. And I think part of what we need, and I don't know what your newsroom looks like, but part of what we need probably are more people of color in our media newsrooms, in, you know, as reporters, as editors, behind the scenes, because then they could be taking a look at that and help sensitize staff and editors to what's going on too.
Yeah, I think that's absolutely true, and the American Society of Newspaper Editors has for a long time advocated trying to have our newsrooms in America reflect the general population of the community, and that organization has fallen way short of its goals. It wanted the newsrooms to reflect the community population by the year 2000. We've been working on this for a long time, and it grows every year, but it's like 11% nationally, and I think the number of minorities in the general population is maybe 25%, something along those lines. In our particular newsroom, we have two full-time minority staff members. Both are Hispanic reporters, which means that on paper, our newsroom reflects the general – our percentage of minority employees reflects the general community. But it's still mostly white. So, but that's a very good point. I think that's something that we talk about a lot in terms of ethnic diversity, but also in terms of the age of our staff, the income levels of our staff, because there are – we don't want to be writing about people who are only like us or photographing people who are only like us. So it's a good point. I'm glad the emailer wrote it in and we were able to talk about it. All right. If you have a question, you can phone us at 855-0811 or 877-285-9348 or send your email to noon@indiana.edu. Again, today our guests are Edwin Marshall, who's the IU Vice President for Diversity, Equity, and Multicultural Affairs, and Beverly Callender Anderson, who's the City of Bloomington Safe and Civil Cities Director. Let's talk a little bit about IU's efforts to attract and retain a more diverse student population. I did print off, it's a pretty long document. It's the Comprehensive Strategy for Increasing the Enrollment of Underrepresented Minorities on the Bloomington Campus, and that came from your website. And I know that there's a goal, correct, for what the university wants to look like in 2014. Is that right?
Right. The trustees has said that we need to double the enrollment of underrepresented minority students on the Bloomington campus by 2013-2014 academic year. And that is a challenge that obviously my office is in the middle of because we tend to be the catalyst for a lot of programs that address issues around recruitment, retention, persistence from one year to the other. But I think also we have to look at the visibility of Indiana University and how it's perceived in many minority communities. And for various reasons, sometimes those perceptions may not have been as positive as we would like. Some of these are historical of many years gone by, but they still exist. I have been trying to develop programs towards expanding our visibility on the positive side. Since I've been in office, this is my, I think, sixth month as vice president, I have kind of identified as our mantra, our slogan, Destination IU, that Indiana University should be a destination institution for students from diverse backgrounds. And with any journey, you have to identify a destination that you want to arrive at. And you do that based upon your experiences with that particular destination. So we want to place as best we can in the minds of students early in their academic career, starting with that pre-kindergarten, kindergarten, first and second grade level, that as part of their academic journey, Indiana University should be a destination. It should not necessarily be looked at as a default institution. It should not be – they should not think of university life as something that, well, I may get to or I may not. It should be not if. It should be when. And so we want to try to build that imagery that IU is part of their destination. Mm-hmm. So we have programs that are working to make that happen at the P16 level, but we also then, as I said before, once we get them here, we need to make sure that the environment is welcoming, is nurturing, and that we have the necessary support systems in place to make sure that their experience is both academically successful as well as experientially and culturally successful.
How does an organization or a city department like Beverly's play into your strategy? I mean, Bloomington has a safe and civil city office, and I would assume, and Beverly, you can correct me mm-hmm. if I'm wrong, that Bloomington is somewhat unique in that there aren't a lot of communities that have something like that. Mm-hmm. So, is that something that you use or mention to?
Well, we have to. I mean, Bloomington and Indiana University, I believe, are partners in many things, including in this initiative as well. And IU does not exist in a vacuum. It exists in the city of Bloomington. So when one looks at Indiana University, particularly culturally, they also look to the city of Bloomington. And if Bloomington is not as welcoming as we would like, then that will adversely affect our ability to recruit students from diverse backgrounds. Mm-hmm. So we have to collaborate on this and make sure that the entire environment, as well as the entire experience of students, as well as faculty and staff, is one that's going to be supportive and positive.
Now, Beverly, talk about that uniqueness of your office. I remember when it was created. I believe that was in the administration of John Fernandez.
Right.
And then you've been Safe and Civil City Director.
I'm in my third year now.
Your third year. Yeah. So you were hired by Mark Kruzan, mm-hmm. who's continued to support the office. So
exactly.
How well do you think that positions Bloomington? And when you think about other communities that don't have an office like this, what are they missing?
Well, there are other communities that do some of the things that we do. They have special events or, you know, departments, or they may have departments that work on diversity in employment. But I think with the uniqueness of our department is that it's so holistic, and it's a comprehensive look at the entire community, which includes IU. And we do work very closely with a number of IU departments and programs in doing events and projects. And so with the city of Bloomington and having the Safe and Civil City program, we're looking at a very holistic way of how do we make this a welcoming community. And you know, that plays into IU. It plays into our economic development base, because if we are a safe and civil environment, then more people want to come here. They want to have businesses here. They want to live here. They want to retire here, you know. And so I think the difference is the goal. It's not where – and I'm from Chicago, and I know that Chicago has a special events department in their city. And their goal is to put on a special event. Our goal is to ensure a welcoming community. And so I think that's the uniqueness of what we do in the way that we look at it and in the ultimate goal that we try to achieve.
Mm-hmm. Now, your office, this was, would have been before you were in the office, but it was certainly challenged when the Korean student Won mm-hmm. Jun-yoon was shot. And you were involved in
yes.
that from in a different way. Mm-hmm. You were with Bloomington United at the time, right?
Right. Well, I was actually with United Way, but working
yeah.
as a volunteer with Bloomington United.
Yeah. So the question I'm sort of moving toward is how both of your offices work with the international programs and the international community. Is there overlap? Ed?
With Indiana University, you know, we do have an office, another vice president that oversees the international arena. However, there is an aspect of my office as relates to the climate and the multicultural piece that works closely with the vice president, you know, for international programs to make sure that when we say Bloomington and IU needs to be welcoming and nurturing, it's not just for African American students or Hispanic students or Native American students or Asian students. It needs to be welcoming and nurturing for all students. And as our society becomes much more globally diverse, the interaction with students from different backgrounds, whether they be domestic or international, sometimes create challenges for other students who have not had the experience of interacting with those individuals previously. So we need to collaborate, as I would do with many offices, in making sure that our environments are as welcoming for all students as well as the international students.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And as well with us, I agree exactly with what Ed said, that it needs to be a welcoming and nurturing place for everyone that wants to be here, that wants to live here. And we have done programs with the International Center at IU. We also have the Sister Cities program, and we currently have three active Sister City relationships, are working on another with Omura City in Japan. And so opening that up and working internationally is part of our goal as well.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
If I may add to sure. that, too, you know, it's a two-way street. Normally when we talk about international programs, we default to students coming here. Mm-hmm. But it's also important, I think, for our students to have an international experience themselves abroad. And we are working with international programs, even with some of the programs with my own office. We're looking to try to increase the level of international experience for students of color to make sure they have those opportunities to go abroad. Because let's face it, they're going to have to interact at a much higher level internationally than maybe you and I have had to in the past.
Yeah, I've thought a lot recently about my lack of attention in French class when I was growing up. Wish I'd paid more attention. All right, our phone number is 855-0811, 877-285-9348, and noon@indiana.edu. And I might add, I probably should have taken something other than French. Might have served me better today.
Hablo español?
That would be good. Ed, we were talking a little bit about the importance of diversity as a core value. You mentioned that before we went on the air, and I want both of you to talk about that. Why is diversity important? Why is the work that both of you are doing so important?
Again, I think if we look at the world in which we live and the world in which we will live in on the next 10, 15, 20, 30 years, what we see today is just a prologue of what's to come in terms of diversity and the different experiences and backgrounds and beliefs and cultures that we will encounter on a daily basis. You know, diversity has to be a core value. It has to be integrated into the fabric of everything that we do. From an educational experience, it does bring currency to the academy. It brings ideas, beliefs, values that might not ordinarily be there but for the people who are representing those values based upon their respective diverse backgrounds. So I think it's extremely important. The business community realized this many, many years ago because, you know, to maintain market share, in order to address those populations it wanted to sell its widgets to, it had to be more diverse and be more sensitive to those diverse cultures and issues.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I say very often, diversity is. I mean, there's nothing we can do about it. It is. We are all here. We are all different, whether that's racially or ethnically, sexual orientation, religion. It just is. And what I have found in my work over the years is that no matter who we are, we basically want the same thing. We want to be able to live in a peaceful environment. We want our kids to do better than what we've done. Everybody wants the same thing. However, we always have problems in how we communicate that. And if we feel like something is being taken away from us for someone else to have something. And so I feel that the work that I do, that Ed does, that his department does, is so important because the number one thing that it does is that it helps people communicate better. It helps people learn how not to feel threatened because someone else is achieving or because someone else is doing the same, you know, as you are. And so that's why this is so important. And there are times, and I hope the mayor isn't listening, but there are times when I say that I would do this job even if I weren't getting paid for it. And in some ways I did before I was appointed to this, because this work it's the basis of what this country is. And so we have to promote diversity. We have to continue to try to learn about other people and learn more about ourselves in the process.
You know, I want your reaction to what I'm going to say, because I think as I think of this more and more, you know, the older I get, the more I learn I don't know, you know. And I think it really helps break down stereotypes and break down misconceptions. One example, and I may have even mentioned it on the air at some point, is about 3 years ago I took a trip to Ukraine on a newspaper trip, and some people from Ukraine came back to visit us, and when they hadn't seen a lot of what they saw in Bloomington. They were from a poor background, and there were friends of mine that said, "Wow, I bet they don't want to go back home." And my response was, "Wow, you know, why would you say that? What they have is different. It's different, but it was fantastic. I mean, they had some things that seemed to be a great advantage over the hustle and bustle that we have." And that's just, you know, you say diversity is, well, their life was. I mean, it was what they knew, what they loved, and there were so many, we had so many great experiences over there, and it didn't involve going into Target. You know? Mm-hmm. So it was, you know, there are these stereotypes about, and I said when we were going to Ukraine, I couldn't make my brain see the sun shining there, because my history, you know, of growing up during the Cold War and everything that was going on, was like, well, that's part of the Soviet Union. The sun never shines there. You know, so it taught me a lot. That trip taught me a lot about this idea of, you know, we all know that people stereotype and that stereotypes are unfair, but it taught me a little more about it.
And I think it's really easy for people to stereotype groups. And much like your experience, and I'm sure we, Ed and I, have both had international experiences, it's easy to stereotype groups. And then when you meet people one-on-one or when you go to a place, it dispels those stereotypes. And I think part of the importance of Black History Month or Hispanic Heritage Month or Asian American Pacific Islander Month is that it gives us an opportunity to meet people one-on-one. It gives us an opportunity not only to look at history and to see where people have come from, but also to see those things that are important as far as music and art and culture and food. And it starts to break down a lot of the myths, like the sun not shining,
right,
you know, that we've built up over time because of whatever experience we've had through media or television or history books.
Yeah.
It brings me back to your question earlier about the role of the media, because you know your reaction was different than your friends because of your personal experience. Mm-hmm. And too often, again, we bring to the conversation whatever baggage we may have, and too frequently that baggage is based upon what we see through the media. Mm-hmm. And so the image that they portray is the image that we carry with us, mm-hmm, until we are able to have those personal experiences.
Right. Okay. Our phone numbers again are 855-0811 or 877-285-9348. Or you can send your email to noon@indiana.edu. We're talking with Edwin Marshall today, who's the IU Vice President for Diversity and Equity and Multicultural Affairs at Indiana University, and Beverly Callender Anderson, Bloomington Safe and Civil Cities Director. You're listening to Noon Edition. We'll be right back.
You're listening to Noon Edition on member-supported WFIU. Production support comes from Closets 2, providing organized and expanded closet and storage space for home office and garage using a variety of systems with no major renovations. Closets 2 owned and operated in Bloomington, 332-2233. And from South Dunn Street Project, represented by Brian Lampton Real Estate, classic bungalow-inspired architecture in the Bryan Park neighborhood of Bloomington, www.southdunstreet.info. WFIU is a media sponsor for the Hoosier Hills Food Bank's annual Soup Bowl benefit taking place this Sunday, and a sponsor for the Big Brothers Big Sisters of South Central Indiana's 2008 Edward Jones Bowl for Kids' Sake. Now, the annual Soup Bowl benefit is already sold out. There are still a number of ways that you can help fight hunger in Monroe and surrounding counties. The Big Brothers Big Sisters of South Central Indiana's Bowl for Kids' Sake takes place the 23rd through the 1st. That's at Suburban Bowling Lanes, and teams are forming now. More information about both these areas at WFIU.org.
Welcome back to Noon Edition. I'm Bob Zaltzberg from the Herald Times. Mary Catherine Carmichael cannot be with us today, so I'm doing this solo. But I have two great guests, Edwin Marshall, the IU Vice President for Diversity, Equity, and Multicultural Affairs, and Beverly Callender Anderson, the Safe and Civil Cities Director for the City of Bloomington. If you have questions or comments, please phone us at 855-0811 or 877-285-9348. Or you can send your email to noon@indiana.edu. I wanted to start this second half of the program by asking about some programs, Beverly, mm-hmm, some programs that you have through the Safe and Civil City program that you'd like to mention.
Well, a couple of things specifically related to Black History Month. We have had a number of programs. Our theme this year was generations, and we're sort of examining the passing down of knowledge and culture and history from one generation to the other. And tomorrow, actually, at 3 o'clock at Tri-North Middle School, there's going to be a fashion experience. They're not calling it a fashion show, but a fashion experience where they'll examine trends in fashion and in music through the ages. And so we'd love to have people come out and join us for that. Also, tomorrow is a minority mentoring program in conjunction with National Girls and Women in Sports Day, and that will be at the School of Hyper, and we're involved in that as well. And then the National Girls and Women in Sports Day game on Sunday and maybe I should have let Ed say this, I don't know, but IU versus Michigan, and that's a really great time for girls to come out and learn about some of the opportunity, girls and boys, but it really focuses on women and girls in sports, to come out and learn about some of the opportunities available at IU Bloomington and some of the things they need to be doing to prepare themselves to go to school, and then also enjoying the game. And then next Saturday, the 23rd, the city is concluding their Black History Month events with a Black History Month gala, which will take place at the Convention Center. Tickets are $35, and there will be music by the Dynamics. The award for the Young Outstanding Black Male will be presented, and there are a number of things that are going on, but we'd love to have people come out to any of those Black History Month events.
You talk about staying power. The Dynamics are still playing.
The Dynamics are still playing, and they're still great.
Yeah. All right. Ed, Black History Month events at IU?
Yeah, we have a whole series of events. Many of these are through the various offices that we oversee, the Cultural Centers, for example. Most of them are either centered around lecture series, our cultural programs. These are listed are available on our website, and I would direct the listeners to those.
Okay. All right. I know that there are, we're talking about Black History and Black History Month, but in Bloomington, Indiana, pretty much everywhere around the nation, there's also a great increase of Hispanic, Latino residents, I would assume students here on campus. Beverly, what kinds of programs do you have that are addressing this issue?
Well, as part of the Safe and Civil City program, we do have a Latino outreach program, and we have a Latino outreach coordinator as well as an assistant. We do things like translations. We help people find their way in the community, connect them to social services. Right now, we're working with I think it's called VITA at the library to do tax preparation for Spanish speaking people in Bloomington. So there are a number of services that we do offer, and just by calling the office, people can find out what that is, or visiting the website as well. And Ed gave a plug for his website, but we're at bloomington.in.gov, and the Latino outreach program's listings are there.
Okay. Ed, how about Latino or Hispanic students on campus? Is that growing?
The numbers are growing. Uh-huh. And we, in fact, if we look at enrollment, both total enrollment as well as first year enrollment, we're seeing those numbers increase for most groups, for American Indians, Asians, as well as Hispanics. Unfortunately, over the last two or three years, they declined slightly for African Americans. They hit their peak year around 2005, but I'm told that the numbers have rebounded, and we expect to see significant increases for this coming class. So that's highly promising. But in terms of supporting this growing number of students, as I mentioned earlier, under our multicultural initiatives, we have four cultural centers. I think we're about the only university, to my knowledge, has four cultural centers. We have the African American, the Neil Marshall Black Cultural Center. We have La Casa, the Latino Cultural Center, the First Nations Educational Cultural Center, which is the most recent, and the Asian Cultural Center. And these provide support systems for a lot of those students. They provide kind of a home, if you will, that helps them relate back to the cultures from whence they have come, just so they have a piece of that history. And sometimes just having students who look like you, who act like you, who have some of the same beliefs and values that you have, be able to share ideas and to realize that you're not in this alone, as well as the programming that we also offer to again, help them navigate this thing we call Indiana University.
Mm-hmm. Do each of you have, one issue or one question or one concern that just keeps coming up, time and time again? I mean, I think about, in my own job, it might be the call about, can you keep my name out of police beat? things that I just know that in a period of a couple of weeks, I'm going to hear this question or this concern or this issue come up. Are there things like that you face in your
I think in my particular position, one of the beauties of the position is that no day is ever the same. And there are always different questions, and not necessarily related to diversity as we're talking about race or ethnicity. As many people know, we've dealt with the noise issue, lower the boom. We deal with employment issues. And so there are always, you know, there are always different things that are coming up. So I don't know that there's any one. I tell people, and I've said to other groups this month, every year we get the same question of why are we celebrating Black History Month? Mm-hmm. I mean, that is a question that, and I don't know if Ed gets that, but, you know, why Black History Month? But
that, and how do you answer that?
Well, I answer it the way that I've answered it earlier today, is that it's really necessary to learn about people, to learn the history, to learn the culture, to help dispel myths, and that it's not just about Black history. It's a piece of American history that has been missing for so very long, and that what this does is fills in some of the gaps for all of us and not just for African Americans. And I answer it the same way when people ask me about Asian Pacific Islander Month or Hispanic Heritage Month. It's helping to fill in those gaps of American history.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
I think also it's an opportunity to just take a pause and reflect back upon the contributions that individuals from various cultures have made to this country. And I think too often we take things for granted or we don't understand, you know, those contributions. So it's not only to celebrate, but it's also to appreciate. Mm-hmm. And I think that's very, very key in terms of the education of not only our students but also of the adult population. And when we look at the youth, I think it gives them something to look towards as well. It's something that, yes, I can do that. I can be that person. Not having that history, not having that role models to point towards, too often I think leaves us out there without a rudder. And so I think it gives us some degree of focus that, yes, if they did this in those times, I surely can begin to think about doing this in these times.
Mm-hmm. Before I have a follow-up to that, but before I do, I want to give you the opportunity to answer that other question I ask about. Are there things that come up, you know, in a repetitive nature, that come up every couple of weeks, you know you're going to deal with or hear this question?
Well, if I go back to my Destination IU philosophy that, you know, this is a journey, what keeps coming up, if I look at Indiana University is at towards the end, at least of that perspective of the journey. What keeps coming up is what are we doing about the other end, you know, the upstream piece, growing that pipeline. And if we look at the state of our schools, if we look at the level of performance that our kids are demonstrating, we look at how many are satisfying the Core 40 requirements, which is going to become a requirement for entrance into IU. We have a lot of work to do. If not, I think it's not going to be a problem of diversity. It's going to be a problem of economic development for this state as well as the country. So I think what keeps surfacing, at least in my mind and individuals I interact with, is how are we going to make sure that the youth of the future are adequately prepared to deal with the rigors of not only an undergraduate education but also the rigors of this global competition that we see increasing.
Mm-hmm. Okay, we have about 10 minutes to go in the program, actually about 15 minutes. If anybody wants to join us, the phone numbers again are 855-0811 or 877-285-9348, or you can send your email to noon@indiana.edu. I'm not going to ask either one of you to reveal your political positions on presidential candidates, but I do want to ask about Barack Obama and about where you see his place in history. And, you know, how do you view this presidential year? Is this, you know, we've had Black presidential candidates before, Jesse Jackson, and you know, comes to mind. This seems to be different. How do you – just give me a reaction to Barack Obama and the things that he's brought to this presidential election.
Oh, I'm sorry. I mean, it's history in the making. I mean, this – not only Barack Obama but also Hillary Clinton, but specifically – I mean, it's history in the making. And I don't think that I anticipated seeing an African-American or a woman get this close to the presidency. in my lifetime. I think one of the things that I appreciate most about both of their campaigns is the energy that it has brought to young people. There are so many young people that are now interested in the political process, that are watching debates, that are taking a stand. And, yeah, we've had minority candidates before. We've had female candidates before. Mm-hmm. The first African-American candidate was a female, was Shirley Chisholm. But none of them brought the kind of energy and the kind of hope that the candidates, the Democratic candidates this year, have brought. And that's the thing I think that excites me and why I think this will go down in history books. And when we're talking about, you know, African-Americans who have made history, certainly Barack Obama's name is going to be there in the future.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't mean to slight Hillary Clinton in this conversation either, but since it's Black History Month, I mentioned Barack Obama.
I would have to, you know, echo those comments and, you know, not giving away any political affiliation one way or the other. But I think, you know, his slogan of yes, we can, I think is extremely important. It sends a message that, you know, we can create change. And the fact that he and Hillary, you know, are vying for the Democratic, you know, nomination, to me, you know, is historical. And the outcome will also be historical in terms of who ultimately ends up with the nomination. But that yes, we can mantra and change is something that does energize, I think, the population. And as I mentioned earlier, in dealing with the younger population, it does give them a point of focus. It gives them a path that, yes, we can, and yes, I can do it as well. And I think that's very, very positive.
I think it's the hope. I mean, he's brought hope to a group of people that didn't seem to have a lot of hope in the and faith in the political process. So that, I think, is he can write that down as an accomplishment.
Yeah. All right. We have a couple phone calls. So let's go to the first phone call, and it's Jane. Jane?
Oh, hi. I'm just curious. I was listening. I may have missed, but it seemed I didn't hear any discussion of the Native American Indians.
Uh-huh.
And the problems in the country. Is there are work going on there?
Yeah. Ed did mention it a little bit, but go ahead, Ed.
Yes. We are just kind of stack on the we do have, I mentioned earlier, one of our four culture centers. The most recent one is the First Nations Educational Cultural Center, trying to provide that cultural home for Native American students at IU. I might add that next month we will be bringing 20 students from the Navajo Reservation in Arizona to Bloomington, to IU, for about a four-day experience, trying to, again, give them the impression that, yes, they too can be at Indiana University. And so this is a relatively new initiative, but realizing that, yeah, problems exist there, challenges exist there as well. And we're going to try to address those as best we can.
All right, Jane. Thanks a lot for the call. All right. And now the next call is Dave. Dave?
Hi.
Hey, Dave.
The discussion seems to be around maybe a more global perspective, but I guess I would like to ask a question about how you deal with some of the issues of tolerance and intolerance on a more local level. You know, for example, just a simple thing like a neighborhood adjacent to the university campus saying we don't want a lot of those students in our neighborhood. So could maybe you touch on some of the more local things?
Sure. I'm sure we can. Beverly?
Well, one of the things our office does, we work a lot with neighborhood associations. We work with other grassroots groups. We mentioned Bloomington United earlier. And so when issues do come up, as opposed to the city handing down an edict, we try to work with groups that are being directly impacted. And so when concerns are voiced, we work with those groups to come to peaceful resolutions. We also work with the Community Justice and Mediation Center. And so a lot of times there is mediation that goes on. It may not be a big, well-publicized program, but there are things that are being done behind the scenes.
And also at IU, you know, we have we have one entity called COMU, Committee on Racial, Multicultural Understanding, And it's designed to bring together individuals to talk about these issues and try to work through these issues and come up with solutions that will try to not allow those things to happen as we go forward.
Dave, any follow-up? Any specific thing you want to ask about?
No, I guess more than anything else, is just see that we have some of those local opportunities.
You know, if I may add, David, I think it's also important each of us, though, take this on as a mission. Even though, you know, we have various organizations and groups that come together to try to address this from an organizational perspective, it's up to each of us individually to, as we encounter these sorts of events, to address them directly. Because I think, you know, it's not something that my office alone or Beverly's office alone is responsible for. It's something that, as a community, we all are responsible for.
And if there are issues that come up that you would like to see if the Safe and Civil City program can be involved in, you are always free to call. We welcome your input into what's going on in the community. And the number is 349-3560.
All right, Dave, thanks
great.
A lot.
Great, those are the numbers. Thanks.
Okay, thanks a lot for the call. 855-0811, 877-285-9348, and noon at indiana.edu. We have just a few more minutes, but we could certainly slide in another phone call or two. I want to ask about Black history again, from get a personal perspective from both of you about people who, you know, we might not think about, the general population might not think about who you know about in Black history who have been important in your lives or somebody that you think people should learn more about. Beverly, you want to start? I know that's not an easy one.
Well, there are so many people and so many things that have happened. One of the things that or one of the people that I had a chance to do a little more research on this year was Benjamin Banneker. And it's a name that we hear a lot, you know, especially in Bloomington because of the Banneker Community Center. But I don't know how many people have actually looked into his life, excuse me, and done the research. And he was an astronomer and a mathematician and just a person way, way before his time that had a large impact on society, you know, with the things – with the invention of the clock or the reproduction of clocks and watches. And so I think that that is – that was really interesting. And with that, I will encourage you to stop by Benjamin Banneker Center because there is a historical marker that is going to be going up. We unveiled it last weekend, and it will be going up in the spring marking that as one of the two colored schools in Bloomington where African-American children attended.
Okay, Ed?
Personally, I think one of the greatest influences to me as a young child, and this is not someone who's off the radar screen but very visible on the screen, would be Martin Luther King Jr. As a young child, I had a chance to participate in a march with him in Albany, Georgia, and witness, you know, firsthand not only the coming together of people, but then in the aftermath, the retort from the not-so-friendly onlookers. And as a child, you know, experiencing that and trying to wonder why is this happening, I think created for me a lot of questions that I've tried to find answers for throughout my adult life. But I think, you know, getting more personal, I think it's parents, it's relatives, mm-hmm. those who have kind of helped us with those oral narratives of their experiences and being able to talk with them about, you know, their challenges and build upon that as we go forward, to me, I think, are the unsung heroes. It's not the ones necessarily who are always in the limelight, but the ones behind the scenes who are living this on a daily basis, but who are able to kind of help direct us away from some of the ills of their past.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I really want to second that. I think parents downplay how important they are in their children's lives, and parents and grandparents and those cousins and aunts and uncles really, you know, that is our history. That is our personal history. And so I would encourage people to even go back and gather some of that oral history from relatives that they have that are still with us, you know, before they leave, because there is so much. They've lived through so much, and I think that is a place where people can really find out a lot about not only the history of their families, but the history of the country and what was going on during particular times.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Now, in the last 2 or 3 minutes of the program, I want to give you the opportunity to talk about the biggest challenge that's facing you right now. I mean, Ed, in your office, what's the one or one or two of the biggest challenges that you think are ahead?
I think the biggest challenge is to instill within the fabric of the university, within our constituent communities, all those that we interact with, the importance of diversity and what it brings to the academy and to the dialogues that we have around many topics. It has educational currency that we cannot underestimate. I think too often we look at increasing diversity because it's something nice to do, or to use an old adage, is politically correct. But more importantly, it does have educational value. It has economic development value. Again, as we look at this country and how it's evolving in terms of its populations and as the world begins to shrink, you know, the world is becoming flat again, that we're going to have to interact with many more people who we necessarily did not interact with in the past. And unless we're able to do that successfully, we are not going to be able to achieve those high marks that we have set for ourselves. So diversity gives us the skill set that allows us to deal in this global world. And trying to instill that sort of philosophy within the minds of everyone, you know, not just certain pockets of the population, but and make it integral throughout our system is the greatest challenge. I would, you know, ideally, someone asked me earlier about a similar question. I said, you know, ideally, it'd be nice to see my office go away, you know, so that it's not needed. So that because we all look at this, I don't see color, I don't see culture. I mean, I respect culture and I appreciate culture, but I don't see it as something that's discriminating in terms of how I'm going to respond.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Beverly, last minute?
1 minute.
Oh, yeah.
I think we are dealing with so many issues in our community right now, the moving of or the closing of GE and home foreclosures and all of those things. And what I would hope is that we don't allow race, ethnicity, sexual orientation, religion to become the visible means of how we're dealing with those issues. And sometimes because race is so visible and we're dealing with so many other issues, it becomes the problem. And so I think that we all need to come together to deal with the aftermath of some of the issues that the community is facing. And hopefully my office will be a positive influence in doing that. But I think our community has a lot of challenges right now, and I just don't want us to start allowing our differences to come to the forefront as an excuse for what the real problems are.
Okay. And with that, we're out of time. I appreciate your comments. Our guests today have been Edwin Marshall from IU's Office of Diversity, Equity, and Multicultural Affairs. He's Vice President. And Beverly Callender Anderson, Bloomington Safe and Civil City Director. For Mary Catherine Carmichael, who couldn't be with us today, for producer Catherine Hegeman and engineer Mike Pashkash, I'm Bob Salzberg. Thanks for listening.
Noon Edition is a production of WFIU and the Herald Times. A podcast of this and other WFIU programs is available at wfiu.org.